welcome to Cooper Talk. I'm your host, Steve Cooper. And remember, I'm only as hip as my guest. And we have a great guest today, but I just want to say I'm a little irritated. I've been trying to watch the Olympics, and I didn't like the opening ceremony that much, and I thought Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira looked like they were announcing the Macy's Day Parade. And as I also was watching it, I can't take the spoiler, because what happens is my girlfriend lives back east, so she watches it earlier, then I have to wait till 8 o'clock to watch it, so she wants to tell me who won, and she can't. Like, Missy Franklin won last night, and she wanted to tell me because it was such a great race and she was such an underdog. And every time you go into a computer, you can't look at your computer because the middle... You have to look at the middle, because the top says who medal count and who won, and I just think it really sucks. I think they should just put it on live. I just think, you know, I know it doesn't make them money, but come on. You know, it's just bad for us. But anyway, that's just my feeling about the Olympics. I'll still watch him. But we have a great guest today. I'm very happy to have this gentleman. It's been like forever we've been talking, and and it's great for him because he's always getting booked. Like, we'll sit there and go, okay, we can do this, and he gets the acting gig or he gets a comedy gig, which is great because, you know, I mean, if people don't get acting gigs or comedy gigs, you know, they're going to be like, we have nothing to talk about. But we have a very funny Rick Overton. Thank you for coming on, Rick.
Hey, Coop. Thanks for having me on, man.
No problem. And I know I was reading up on your bio now. Now, I always talk to my guests about comedy when we started. Now, you started at 16.
Yeah. Now, I started really, I think, in my comedy team with Anthony, but we called him Ton, T-O-N-N, Pastor.
Okay.
And he was my first comedy partner, and he's my buddy. He lives down in Florida, and we talk all the time. He's still hilariously funny. But then he moved away to Florida to work in the sales business.
Okay.
And so we had to break our New Jersey team up. And so I was looking for another partner.
We're from Jersey. We're in Jersey.
Englewood.
Okay, because I grew up in Cherry Hill, but I'm a Jersey guy.
Yeah, right.
So, but, okay, so you had to, you broke, you know, up the team.
Under the bridge, so I was always going to New York.
Okay.
So I found another partner.
All right.
A buddy of mine, Bill Spitz, said, hey, you got to meet this guy named Roger Sullivan. He's like hilarious. He's like Marty Feldman in some ways, and he's like Monty Python and others. And so me and Sullivan, we were Overton Sullivan for a few years, and that's when we really broke into adulthood. And we're talking like now 73, 74.
Okay.
And I'd already been doing it a bunch of years of just in school, just, you know, for the core elemental reasons of meeting women and,
right,
and girls, making them like you in class. And
that always was a thing. That was always, right, like, if you got laughs, like, that helped me, because I used to do, I got along with the football players, and they would never, like, years later, they saw me at a show, and they'd be like, they're like, we always knew you'd be a comic, because you always just made these, I was never the class clown. They said, you always just made these comments that would make us laugh.
Yeah.
So were you a
naturally
class,
funny.
Yeah, were you a class clown?
I was totally a class clown.
So you're doing the comment. What was it like, I mean, being 16, I mean, did you have to sneak into the clubs, or what was that?
My dad would take me there. He was a jazz musician. He was a hip guy. He got me into comedy. I think subconsciously he wanted me to go into comedy because it was a dream of his.
Okay.
Because he would always see the comics that would come in and open for the jazz musicians he was working with in the Village back in the 50s and 60s.
Okay.
And I think he'd bring me in to watch that, and it would stick in my head. I could sense the longing to do it. And I saw him laugh, and whenever I would do something that would get him to laugh, I correlated the approval.
Okay, well, that makes sense. And so you're in the clubs, you're doing it. Now, you have Overton and Sullivan.
Yeah.
Now, how long did you guys stay together?
5 years.
And now, what clubs were you working in New York?
We broke in at Catch and then the Improv. We were like some of the last acts that Bud chose before he made the L.A. jump and opened the L.A. room.
Okay.
And we had the Comic Strip, then the Comedy Cellar, but then back then there was Alan Dick's Steakhouse, there was Dangerfield's, you know.
Now, who were some of the comics, that, as you started, like, who were some of the comics that you were performing with? Or, I mean, you probably had that camaraderie. You always get like a group of comics. Like in Philly, we had some guys, they hang out, and there was a rivalry between a few of the clubs. But who were some of your contemporaries?
Elaine Boozler, Richard Belzer, Andy Kaufman. Got sort of to know Pryor a little bit, but okay. I mostly got to know George Carlin.
Okay.
And then Hicks and, you know, Larry Miller, Jerry Seinfeld.
So a great class. I mean, that's like, you know.
It's the Gregory, Gilbert Gottfried, you know.
Now,
huge, Carol Leifer.
You know, I remember you were on an episode of Seinfeld.
Paul Reiser, yeah, right. You know, Paul Provenza
was
like a guy that when I broke out on my own, he was one of my tightest bonded buddies in the business when I was kind of nervous about looking to my left and there's no guy there holding a mic and I was like stranded on Gilligan's Island without the rest of the cast, you know?
What made you the decision? Were you guys just getting along? Did you want to go different ways or were you growing as an act?
I think it's just everything and just being hot-headed, dopey kids. And, you know, it all turns to crap once you have to split a paycheck in half, regardless of how symbolic or inconsequential that paycheck is. Once you start fighting over whose premise is more important than whose punchline.
Okay.
You know, you're artists right up until that first paycheck.
Right. Because
there's nothing else on the line. It's all slapping each other. Oh, no, you were best. You know, and then the paycheck, bum, bum, bum. You bastard, but I'm the one who owns the car, but I filled the tank. You know?
It's like a married couple.
Like a married couple bickering over the monthly bills. Yeah.
So you decided to make a break, and as you said, I mean, it must have been scary because you're doing it for 5 years with this guy, and all of a sudden you're stripped down. I went away from the business for a while, and I just got back into it like 2 years ago, and I was doing it from 88 to 95. Hmm. And when I came back, it was scary because it's like I can't use the material I used to use because it's all dated, but I can't. I also have to just get on stage, and it was scary getting on stage for the first time. I mean, even though I had a big stage appearance, what was it with you when your first time on night, when you got up without your partner? Was it just, were you terrified or you just
I was nervous, you know, but I had a few Heinekens in me, and so I just sucked in the deep breath and went out with my stuff, and it was a lot of people who were my friends in the audience that night because they heard, hey, look, he's going to do the thing without Roger tonight, and so let's go see what he does, and they were extra supportive, so I kind of landed on a cushioned pillow when I fell, you know, and so but it gave me enough confidence. So I really believe in giving someone a burst of confidence over being brutally critical to them early on. Because just because you posed a great question about how do you fix this or this, they may not be equipped today to solve it. And that brutalization made them no longer look for that answer. And they'll never perfect it later because you hit them too hard right now. I've found that. And, you know, I believe in being honest about advice, but in that honesty has to be a sort of buffered zone to, I think, realistically address the way people grow.
Right.
Because I think you'd be brutal. And listen, mark me off all the times being brutal to them worked perfectly and they turned out to be just, you know, Olympic in quality afterwards.
Right.
It almost never happens.
I know, it's true. I had a comic on a few weeks ago and he just said he was in Atlanta. He went to college down there, and the booker just said, "Oh, you're just not funny." And that's like it's their first or second time on stage. It's like, of course not. I mean, in all honesty, no one goes up on stage their first or second time. I mean, it takes years, and that's what people don't understand. Yeah. I mean, you have people out here or anywhere who go, "Oh yeah, I have 30 minutes," and it's like, "How long have you been doing comedy?" And they go, 6 months, and it's like, "No, you don't." I mean,
isn't it hilarious how the one thing the comic keeps, regardless of if there's anything to back it up, is a "Oh, yeah, I've been there. I did that."
Yeah.
You're 2 days in. Yeah, I did that yesterday. Oh, man, I look back on yesterday like it was yesterday.
So you're hitting New York. Now you're going solo, and now are you starting to branch out on the road, or are you just hitting the clubs in New York, or what? I mean, I know you ended up...
So we're the clubs in New York, and that led to road work, and I started to work a lot down in Washington, D.C.
Garvin's?
The Cellar Door and Garvin's Grill.
With
Harry Montecrucos.
Okay, I did it with the VJ Nelson was the
partner. Oh, yeah, right, sure, sure.
Okay. And, you know, you did Philly a few times?
Stars. And Philly and Grandma Minnie's. Do you remember Grandma
Minnie's? I don't remember Grandma Minnie's.
Did you ever hear of it? No. Rich Hall used to work there all the time.
Well,
that's when he ran into Mitch. That's when he met Penn Jillette.
Okay.
He was juggling in the street, throwing knives and doing comedy.
Okay.
And they were part of the Asparagus Valley Restoration Society or something like that. And that was the name of their sketch group. And they would mix weird, surreal sketches with magic.
Okay.
And Penn and Teller were the offshoot of that.
Yeah, because I believe Penn went to Temple, University of Temple.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting because, you know, I mean, I started in 88 and it was like there's a Comedy Works and like Going Bananas is about to close.
Yeah, Going Bananas, right.
With Barney Weiss.
Oh, man.
And I was always like, that was just in a weird location. It was real dark. Kinda... When you walk out, you're like, where am I going? Even though it's a safe neighborhood, you're just like, I'm going into a different world.
How can you make a safe neighborhood suddenly feel dangerous again? Well, they figured it out. They cracked it.
So you go.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for keeping the numbers low. I like working my craft of three people.
Isn't that the worst?
Craft.
It's the worst when you go into an audience and you walk in. There's like four people, and you go. And they go, you have to do this much time, and you're just like, oh man.
Oh,
you know,
man.
There's not even a laugh bumper. It's the weekend, and it's a club in Philly, and there's no one here, and you're like, oh god.
I love Philly. You know, I had a lot of good times in Philly.
Comedy Works was good. The Comedy Factory Outlet.
Yeah, comedy working with Steve Young.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Later. In like around 80, 81, 82, with the brilliant Judy Toll.
Okay.
Genius Judy Toll. Hilarious.
Okay. I mean, I think that was before my time. A lot of people left, like Dom Herrera and all those people left when we started out.
Dom was the Philly boy with Lisa Mendy at the time.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
It's weird. It's like you think of these people and then you see them and it's like nothing passed.
Thomas F. Wilson.
Was he in Back to the Future?
Biff. He had a tuba. He does a whole routine.
Oh, really?
With his tuba. He's like this gigantic, you know, Goliath of a dude with a tuba. He's hysterical.
So you're doing that, and you're hitting a road. Now, are you getting TV spots then, or like because there was like Evening Improv or stuff like that, or are you just you're hitting a road? You're hanging in New York,
starting to work on what there was of a building road then.
Okay,
but it was exploding.
Right.
The idea of comedy live in a club was on the upswing because it hadn't been completely wiped out by brick wall, spotlight, mic stand shows.
Okay.
And which there was a spate of after Evening at the Improv.
Right.
And it kind of like obliterated the need to go out live and see anything.
Right. So you're now when you started out, did you always want to act too? Because you have an amazing acting. I mean, you have a resume. I mean, it's IMDb. It's like it's one of those things where you have to scroll down. It's like your arm gets tired from scrolling because there's so much stuff on it.
Well, thanks.
I mean, it's great. But so now, when did you start thinking about saying, okay, I'm doing comedy, but I want to start acting too? Or did you always want to act?
I think I always wanted to do certain kinds of acting, and that expanded as I got the confidence from doing the other ones, you know, and then auditioning for stuff you might not have pictured yourself being in the right wheelhouse to do, but they liked your reading, and sometimes it goes in reverse. I'd like to think you could just drive up and tell yourself in the car, rear view, you know, you're it, you've got it.
Right.
But then you're kind of walking into the place going, just because you said something to your face in a mirror doesn't mean anything. Well, you know, shut up just for roughly 20 to 45 minutes. Let me get out of the office before you start speaking up again, will you?
So, okay, now you're in New York. Now, when did you leave New York? Because I'm sitting here. I see your credits start in 1982. So did you move? I know you lived in San Francisco for a while, right?
No, I didn't. Everyone thinks that.
Everyone spent
a lot of time there.
Okay, everyone thought.
Worked so many gigs at Cobb's.
Okay.
That was one of the nice mid-80s, really shape-up kind of gigs where you could start to find, you know, all the road gigs at the time would just let you go infinite time because they didn't. Everyone was so dazzled by it, even the staff wanted to stay and see what you had to say. Whereas another decade in, they're all like, okay, come on, man, I got a babysitter.
Exactly.
And, you know,
it's so funny.
My husband split, I'm paying this chick, and then she leaves after a certain hour. So
That's funny. So, yeah, because a lot of people think you're a San Francisco comic. Actually, I heard a story about you that you drove all across the country. Did you have a motorcycle?
I did.
And you ended up, like, after driving all that time, you went straight to the Catch a Rising Star to do a set. Someone told me, I don't know who told me that story. I think it may have been Jeff Martyr. I don't know, but someone.
It was Catch a Rising Star in Boston.
Okay, they said you drove, and that's like a comic's comic. It's like you just
got off the bike, walked in, and here's Rick Overton. I just timed it because I got stuck. I got hung up coming out of New Hampshire. So, okay. So I finally, boom, finally landed it and got there.
That's funny.
Whew.
So now what? It's just
that was fun.
I don't know if that was Martyr who told me or someone else, but
might have been.
I was just like, oh wait, you know, because Jeff is a good friend. I know he ran into you.
I love Jeff. Rose. He's brilliant. That two mic bit.
Oh yeah,
I think that's one of the indelibly smart pieces of material about the hemispheres of the brain. What joke for what hemisphere?
Right.
And the two mics. He tells the different joke for what side of your head you'd
exactly.
like to hear the joke. That's a masterpiece.
Everyone thinks he's a chiropractor. Like every comic comes along, I heard he became a chiropractor, and I tell him that, and he's like, "That's great. That's my legacy. I became a chiropractor." So
adjust my funny bone. That should be on the card, you know.
Exactly. He isn't though. That's the best part. He's not a chiropractor. But I mean, it's weird how stories go in the comedy world. Like when someone says, and they go, "Oh, did you hear Jeff Martyr became a chiropractor?" And it's like, you know. So
you're
now,
saying there's rumors, a rumor mill in comedy?
No, never.
What
never.
What?
No. So when did you move to L.A.? Were you booking work in New York? Were you booking acting work?
No.
Okay.
No acting work really kicked into gear. And I was, like, gone so much of the year at that point that I was loving the road.
Right.
It was like one of those jumping Chuck E. Cheese right. things filled with, like, inflated balls.
Right.
But filled with women.
Oh yeah, that's I tell people that
and
like back
just
in the
dove
day,
dove into it and just bounced around in it for 7-8 years, you know, until that just sort of went away. As I guess it
give me
should have.
Give me some good road stories, some odd road stories, because I always love some like Rich Scheider was on and he was talking about some of the just like the condo in Florida where there's like a guy knocks on the door with a bullet wound and just like weird stuff. I mean, it's just like these things you go, wow. Give me a few some of the weird stuff that happened to you on the on the circuit.
There was a club in Tempe, Arizona, pre-improv Tempe. Tempe was still just becoming Tempe.
Okay.
You know, they're just, hey, we got a new name for half our town.
Right.
And they're starting to dig the roadways for these Spielberg little house and condo setups where it's just basically the sort of rough dirt representation
right.
of where the lot will be and the things, but there's one place that got built and it's up and running with the rest of them the houses that will come. And so what
it's like an Arrested Development, like the one
right.
model house. It's
the
like, okay, and they live in it.
And they live in the model house. This is the condo, I guess the horseshoe double-decker apartment structure with a pool in the center.
Okay.
And so the club owners say at the end of the second show, and are you up for planning a party a little later tonight? And I said, what do you got? And they said, well, the Ferret Sisters. And I said, who? And those two girls are sitting right down front. And they're like doing the thing with the eyes at you. Yeah, those are the Ferret Sisters.
All right.
They don't look like ferrets. Oh, no. One of them owns a ferret. No, they're very beautiful. Don't make it like it's their face. No, they're very cute girls. I said, yeah, I thought they're very attractive. And he goes, yeah, no. One of them actually owns a pet ferret in a cage. And I went, yeah, what kind of party are you talking about? No, man, it's a sex party. With a ferret? No. No, they have this apartment complex, a horseshoe thing out in the middle of the desert. And the rest of the neighborhood's not built up yet. So what does that mean? So that means they get to do whatever they want. And they love the headliners. Yeah? What about the middle? Oh, yeah, they like the middle. He can come, too. So
the host, no. The MC can't.
Yeah,
he's
going to wait in the car. No, bring them all. Okay, what the hell? Bring them all. No class structure. And so we drove out, and the club owners like had a Z car with an exhaust leak, so they had to leave the hatch open. And they're good because there's too many of us piled in.
Right, right.
All piled in the Z with the glass against your head, and you know, driving way too long. And I had two bottles of Korbel champagne,
okay.
and I was ready to get like pounded. So we're there at the. This has got to be what 1981, maybe.
Okay.
And we get to the structure, and there's people milling around, like, topless and bikinis, and, you know, and I walk up the stairs with the guys, and there's a girl with a coverall, and she flings it open like a greeting robot. She's naked and goes, welcome. Oh, no, this is like central casting, but it's hilarious. It's great. And so you go inside, and there's people kind of messing around.
All right.
And, you know, says, well, leave your stuff over there. Oh, it's safe. We're not stealing people. We're very together people. And so I left my crap there, hoping no one would take it. And I'm walking around naked, and I'm getting drunk. And I meet a girl who takes the tickets at the local movie theater.
Okay.
And she's a cute girl, so we're hanging out. And my buddy Adam Leslie, he finds another...
I remember that name.
Adam had another cute girl off in the corner, and they were messing around by the pool. And so the girl and I, we're doing it, and we did it like twice, and I'm kind of, I'm not going to pretend to be Superman. I'm done.
Right.
I'm all through doing
like,
that
check,
part.
Please check. I'm
this
done.
This is it. I can stand around and watch, but I'm pretty much done. And so I'm down to my second, like last third of the second Corbel bottle, and I'm blonk blonk walking around, and I get to the pool, and I'm just trying to chill in the pool, and this girl dives into the pool, and she goes, "You ever had Aqua Head?" And I went, "What's that?" And she goes underwater, and I see these bubbles come up, like, and I like, ah. And she goes, "What did you think?" I said, "And that's not fun. It's really weird. It's a great story later, but right now, I don't want two of those." You know? She got mad, so she splits, and so. I didn't know that was one of the ferret sisters.
Oh, okay.
But I recognized her later, but at the time she startled me. And so I'm just sitting up at the party later, and I'm just like, in the corner. Now both bottles are empty, but they're in my hands, and I'm like, sitting there. And I'm watching the club owner have sex with the girl I just had sex with like no emotional attachment at all. It was very weird. And I'm looking over, and I'm trying to think of something to say, and I said, "So how are our numbers tonight?" And he went, "Hey, good. Yeah, we did good. Went over the cap." And then finally, the girl comes over to me again who gave me the aqua head and said, "Hey, you want to try again?" I went, "I'm good, thanks." And she goes, "You want to meet my ferret?" I went, "Just to change the way, yes, let me see the ferret." And so she goes to the closet and brings this giant cage out, and she takes him out. And it's this long, weaselly-looking guy, and, you know, he looked like an otter. It was kind of cute looking thing.
Right,
and I
right.
said, and she goes, "You want to hold him?" I said, "Sure. He doesn't bite, right?" And she goes, "No, he likes people." Now, at this point, I've got two bottles of Corbel. So you know what my sweat is? It's pure sugar water. And so he licks my nose. And he starts lick, 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 licking my nose. And I pull it away, and he goes, "Nyah!" And he just bites into my nose.
Really?
Bites like a staple remover into my nose. I stand up, and he's hanging like a necktie from my face with blood streaming down all my clothes and face. And I grab it around the waist, and I squeeze it enough to make it let go. And I hold it up while it's biting me on the fingers. And I'm going, "I want to see medical papers on your ferret right now." And she can't find them. She has no proof that this thing has had one single shot
right.
or anything like that. So there we are. Sun's coming up. We're all piled back in the Z car. I've got like a clown nose red disc Band-Aid on the end of my nose, bright red from the seeped blood. And we're just sitting there staring at the sunrise through the open hatch. And I'm just picturing the doctor coming out of the doctor's office going, "Well, you dodged herpes, but you got rabies. I don't know how you did that. That's a sick party, man, when you can get rabies."
That's funny, man. That's just so weird. Stuff like that happens on the road, and people are like, "Oh, not that it happened." It's like, no.
Not happening more.
I know. Well, it was a crazy time.
Those are crazy consequence-free times.
We're going to take a quick break. Your website or Twitter or?
Look me up on my page on Facebook.
Okay. It's Rick Overton.
Yeah.
R-I-C-K-O-V-R-E-T-O-N. Right.
That would be me.
Okay. Well, check him out. Any shows coming up?
I'm going to be doing the Zeitgeist Media Festival at the Avalon Theater
okay.
on the 5th
okay.
of August. And it's an all-day festival, and I'm in there in the mid to later. They're pinning the time down exactly, but it's a mid to late afternoon.
Okay, great. People also, for me, check out coopertalk.podbean.com, which soon will be coopertalk.net. I'm a computer idiot, so I can't figure out how to link Cooper Talk to my Podbean thing, even though I have the domain. So I'll be getting that taken care of soon. And also, at Cooper Talk, follow me on Twitter, and at Cooper Talk on Facebook. We'll be back with a very funny Rick Overton, who, that's a true story, people. You don't understand. That's what comedy was like. You people listen, like, I get some younger comics. Like, you don't believe how the road, I mean, the yes. road was insane. I mean,
they got stories now, like, "And then they took us to this cheese tasting. It was crazy. There was every kind of cheese. I'm not even messing around."
Yeah, it's like, here it's when we were back in the day. It's like, I woke up in a brothel covered with lice, and I didn't know how I was going to get on stage the next night because I couldn't walk because I was missing a foot. And that's the kind of crap that happened back then. And I mean, there are stories. And these guys are before me. So they actually have the real down-to-earth story. I mean, like, it wasn't as bad then, but these guys are the ones who broke into Comedy Condo. And you've heard people talk about the Comedy Condo, which was just like the most disgusting things ever. But
you know, the waitress would always come back with you going, with the headliner going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. I never do this.
Right, right.
And then she'd grab you by the junk and go, I'd like to open with something I call the Kirkenbauer.
That's funny. It's true. You always knew. If you hooked up with a girl who was in the club hooking up with you, you know she's hooking up with a comic every week. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, she's like, oh, are you friends with such and such? And that's when you go, oh, okay, you slept with this guy. So we'll be right back with Rick Overton. It's Cooper Talk. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guest.
I guess the worst part of all this is that the fools who run this show broadcast this crap all over the world. Cooper Talk.
Would you like to find out how you can easily own gold and silver bullion? With oil prices and food costs skyrocketing, there's one sure way to hedge against inflation: owning precious metals. And we can show you how. Operators are standing by with your investor's kit on buying precious metals. Call 1-877-722-7032 to learn the secrets of protecting your net worth. Call now to learn how to hedge yourself with precious metals. We'll show you how to finance and own large amounts of precious metals with small amounts of money. This is not options or futures. We'll show you how to collateralize hundreds of thousands of dollars in precious metals with as little as a 25% investment. For an investor's kit with charts and graphs on the latest precious metals trends and opportunities, call 877-722-7032. That's 877-722-7032. To find out how you can own gold and silver and profit from the wild swings in today's economy. As with all speculative investments, purchasing precious metals involves a risk of loss and should be carefully evaluated prior to investing.
With supershopper.org, you can post your ad online in just 60 seconds. That's fast. That means that old junk sitting in your garage can be online in less time than it takes for you to stub your toe while looking for the light switch. List your electronics, furniture, automotive, garage sales, and more. If you can legally buy it and sell it, it's on. Supershopper.org. Job postings just $25. Everything else free. That means you can post your resume, get a job, find an apartment, furnish it, sell your car, buy an SUV, adopt a pet, find a house, get a mortgage, find a handyman, sell the house, buy a beach house, buy a surfboard. Supershopper.org. Now you get it.
Looking for great deals on apparel? Visit OnlineSalesMart.com. Currently, we have authentic Armani designer sunglasses at $100 or more off original price. Novelty neckties of all types for under $10. Necktie sets at discounted prices. And high-quality and genuine leather dress shoes, wallets, handbags, briefcases, and more for less. Visit www.OnlineSalesMart.com. All major credit cards are accepted and all orders are shipped on the double. Once again, that's OnlineSalesMart.com.
Remember abundance. At Shakey's Pizza, don't cut back.
Cut loose with our all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Less belt tightening.
More belt loosening. Shakey's all-you-can-eat bunch of lunch. Now just $6.99.
Indy100.com.
We're ready. We're ready. Oh, I was telling Rick you're going to go live, and he says, is this live? I said, no, I tape.
This is live.
No, I tape, but it's... No,
I got to fix my makeup.
Exactly. No, I go straight to that, so it seems like it's live, because people hear it, because I don't edit any of this. So I sit there, and I it's like if I don't tell people not to use the F word, like I forget sometimes, because I mean, if it slips, that's fine, but I just don't like, you know, my knee slices or anything, but Bobby Slayton was on, and halfway through, he's like, can I curse? And I'm like, well, it's a little too late to ask that, Bobby. You just said...
Yeah, now you ask.
So me and Rick were talking off radio, off microphone, about just the different, how crazy comedy was, and you look like in your eyes that you have another really good story to tell, which I think it's appropriate.
I got a couple of fun ones. I was one of the early guys to get the pitcher of water on the head from Andy Kaufman as the character of Tony Clifton before he dressed up with all the prosthetic makeup and the fat padded suit and all that stuff and the wig. He'd just come out and just sneer, just do his face like, man, that's Tony Clifton, you know.
Right, right.
There's no special effects or anything, it's just his behavior. And he brought me up on stage. He goes, oh, you want to know what funny is? Yeah, what? Splash. And splash my hair with water. And
now, did you know it was going to happen? Or?
Yeah, he told me. We prepped it in the bar, and he says, you got to sit there the whole show down front, and you planted it there so it doesn't look like you're planted it there.
Right.
And so I had to sit through all my friends and like, hey, what are you doing over there?
Yeah, they're trying to talk to you. What are you doing?
You up nose? And then he came up, splashed me with water, and yeah, it was fun.
Now, were you around when the Tony Clifton character really like took off?
Sure, around to.
I mean, was it just was it
before it took off?
Did people were people really fooled, or did they have a clue, or they just
somewhere? You know, same way some people are fooled on Phil Hendry, no matter how many warnings in the beginning of the show. There's going to be one guy that was driving and didn't hear the warning.
You know, that, I love Phil Hendry. When I was living between here and San Diego, I didn't know it was fake, so I was just dying driving. But then after you hear it, you go, okay, because the first time I hear it. But then he would tell people, that's me, and people still call in bitching, and it's like, you know, I mean, he just his voices were amazing. I mean, the characters were just great.
I can't figure out how every night he finds a new way to hide that raspy
voice of his like this.
Right.
And, oh, sir. And he always, you know, goes, Mr. Henry, sir.
So to make sure it's always saying the name of the other guy.
Right.
Which loads, you know, in someone's head is, oh, it's got to be someone else. Glurk.
So, okay. So you're done. You're on the road. You're how long were you on the road for?
I don't know. I guess, you know, just being on the road isn't always a consistent number
right.
and frequency count. It's just I'm still sort of
right.
every
still
now
go,
and then.
Yeah, but I mean, when you're high
up to Mill Valley to my favorite place on earth, which is everybody go check out the 142 Throckmorton Theater.
I've seen
Mill
you.
Valley.
I've
is,
seen you post about
oh,
that. Now, doesn't is that Mark Pita? Does he host that or
Mark Pita and Friends on Tuesdays?
Okay.
It's great, great room. We just shot set list up there for the BBC.
Okay.
Which is set list, you know.
Right. Troy's been on the show and Paul's been on the show.
You know all about the set list. And so that's now a BBC, but Sky TV, not BBC.
Okay.
Sky TV series, which is the UK's HBO.
Okay.
And so we taped up in Mill Valley and I had some fun sets.
No.
Robin did brilliant.
Okay, so it was you,
Mort
Robin.
Saul.
Oh, really?
Mark Pita, yeah. Dana Gould.
So just an amazing lineup.
Great lineup.
See,
Peter Sultanovich, yeah.
They got to put the show on here. I mean, it's like, you know, it's so funny. It's like sometimes you see, it's you see so much crap on TV. I mean, the reality shows, and they all do, like, if there's hoarding in one channel, then they go, Hoarders Buried Alive, and it's like, you know, and it's like, well, do we really need two shows on Hoarders?
They always need to have three of everything.
I know.
Jersey Shore, three blocks in from the Jersey
right.
Shore. Jersey, not that easy to get to the shore.
See, I hate the Jersey Shore, because my girlfriend lives back east.
Everyone thinks, hey, you from the
right.
Jersey Shore?
We went to
no,
Stone Harbor.
I don't like that.
I know, we went to... we went to Stone Harbor for the weekend, and Stone Harbor is beautiful. There's no like Guidos there. When you say, "Oh, I'm going back to the Jersey Shore," people always say,
"Jersey." Hey, I got two words for you, Thomas Edison.
Right. And Jersey is a very beautiful state. People don't. I mean, there's a lot of you can go skiing. There's green. I mean, there is crap, but every city. I mean, every state has crap.
Yeah, they put the freeways through the stinky part so they don't mess up a nice part of Jersey with a freeway.
Right. See, that's, I never thought about that. That's true, though.
So, they really protect the farmland area without giant smokestack stuff. They want to have milk that doesn't have giant black fleck or coal particles in it.
And great tomatoes.
Great everything.
So,
great out there.
So, okay, so now, when did you move to L.A.?
In late 80.
Late 80. Now,
stayed
no.
with Greg Travis on his sofa.
Okay, so I'm seeing acting credits back in the early 80s. Now, were you living in New York and booking the acting work? Or
I was booking it more when I came out to L.A.
Okay.
I had moved out because Chris Albrecht, who went on to become the creator of many great things on HBO and is now the creative director on Starz Network, he was an agent for ICM, and he kind of gill-netted a whole bunch of comics, just dumped them on the deck like a fishing show out in L.A.
Now,
I came out with the wave with Gilbert Gottfried, a lot of guys, you know.
Okay, so I'm looking at now what was Babes? I'm just looking. There's so many shows
Fox
here.
Fox comedy sitcom about gals who had more weight on them but still wanted to meet guys and have love and all that stuff. And I was Wendy Jo Sperber's boyfriend on Babes. And she was like one of the most brilliantly talented comedians in our era.
I remember that show now. It's so funny because you look at it and you at first you don't notice the name. And you're like, wow, because it is. I mean, it's 22 years ago.
22 years ago.
So I'm going down. I mean, it's so funny. Then you were in Bill's and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
I was the Carlin part.
Okay, so how long? That must have been cool. I mean, you know, you knew Carlin. Must have been a little, you know.
It's hard to make a half-hour show, one camera.
Okay.
And you know why?
Why is that?
Because on a sitcom, the crew only really shows up for one, maybe 2 days to do a pre-shoot on Thursday or maybe get a little block and shoot out of the way.
Okay.
But most sitcoms, you just shoot the night of the taping. So the crew only shows up one night. So for a half hour, you only need so many commercials to pay for that amount of crew to show up.
Okay.
Plus your cast and all that. But if you've got to have it shoot like a 5-day, 6-day shoot week, like a movie, because it's one, maybe two cameras, and you got to capture all the angles and the medium and the full and the close-up and over the shoulder and all that stuff, a day is gone, and you're right. Only 3 pages into the script, you know?
So what was your first acting job that you...
And that's what kills shows that, like, Babes, you know, like... Well, anyway, go ahead.
No. So
I mean, like, not like Babes, like Bill and Ted.
Right, okay, so it was just...
It was a scripted one-camera show with... And it's just really hard to pay for those unless they're so good that you can get away with it, like The Office can
right.
pull it off.
Who was Bill and Ted? Do you remember?
Savage Steve Holland. Oh, it created it. Who were the guys who played Bill and Ted?
Oh, man. Savage Steve Holland was great. He did
Better Off Dead. And, very hip, weird.
Well, he did the claymation.
Claymation. He does great.
It was just great.
Drawn animation.
Yeah, if you talk to anyone, Better Off Dead, everyone remembers when the hamburgers playing guitar to Everybody Wants Some by Van Halen.
Yeah.
And the French fries are jumping into the thing.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so funny. If I meet someone who's over 35 and I say, have you seen Better Off Dead? And they're like, never. It's like, really? Because most people have seen it.
John Cusack, man.
Yeah, he was young.
Bobcat Goldthwait broke him into the movies. He broke Bobcat in.
It's
the first guy to really let him blow out, you know.
Yeah, he did the voice, and it was a classic movie. Well, that was in One Crazy Summer.
That was One Crazy Summer with Bobcat. I'm sorry, you're right.
No, that's but it's, so.
Yeah, hey, Bobcat. Have you seen Bobcat's new movie, God Bless America?
No. Is it a documentary or is it?
No, it's a story about Joel Murray of the Murray Brothers.
Okay,
talented, funny. Guy, great actor, he plays this guy who's doesn't have that long to live anyway, and he's depressive and he wants to blow his brains out, and then he just decides, and he's watching TV and it's all reality shows and everyone's stupid and everybody's selling us stupid, and he's about to blow his own brains out, and he just has an epiphany, I should start killing them first.
Okay.
I want to die anyway, you know. And he meets this young girl who at first they're contentious, and he becomes fatherly to her. She's an abuse victim, and she wants to have sex with him, and he says no as a boundary. It's like, it's really weird to see him have a healthy boundary
right.
with this girl that he's going to train to shoot people he doesn't like.
Right.
You know, and so it's very heavy. And now since the movie theater shooting, I don't know if this movie will ever see the light of day again. I hope it does, because it was a good movie, and it was done before that tragedy.
He directed it?
Oh, he directed it, really. And it's speaking against gun violence by showing it like it's
right.
a parody of a good idea.
See, he's a good director. He was one of my friends did sound for a movie he directed, Windy City Heat, which was...
Yeah, I remember that
which
one.
Which that movie is... It's like, you can't find it on Netflix. You can't find it anywhere, but it's so damn funny. I mean, it's just... And the funny thing is, the guy who's the star is actually like that. I mean, in real life. I mean, that's... It's like, he's a friend of mine on Facebook, and I was talking to his manager one time, and it's like, the guy, I said, do you want to, you know, maybe you should come on Cooper Talk. What does it pay? And I'm like, what do you mean, what does it pay? It doesn't pay. So, but no, it's just because Goldthwait, because everyone remembers the character, but he's a very good director.
He's a great director.
I mean, that's what's...
I can't wait to see what he does next. The film he did with Robin, Father of the Year, is like, you know... I think it's one of the greatest pieces that Robin's done.
Okay. See, that's just, it's so funny. I mean, because he lived in San Francisco for a while too, Bobcat.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that's
how, he's from Boston.
Oh yeah, I know he's from Boston. Now, is that how you guys all knew Robin too? Because you guys were just working your club or?
I met him at Catch.
Okay.
In the 70s.
All right. So wow.
We've been playing together, doing improvs together for like 35 years.
Wow. That's just amazing. I mean, it's just
the set list. They shot a whole separate set list with just us playing back and forth.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That must have been awesome. But hopefully that stuff will go online so people can see it. Because it's we don't get Sky TV. I get BBC, but it's like some filtered down BBC America. But okay, so now I'm looking through. So you get done Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. And then you go to The Edge. Now, The Edge was a sketch comedy show, right?
Edge was... Yeah, David Merkin's show, you know, from the Simpsons. David Merkin.
Okay.
Funny man. And it was an ambitious show. It was also impossible to keep running. So many changes of costume and set. The sitcom, kind of your house is built.
Right.
the place of where you meet, there's this different sets on the stage, and then you go to where they their favorite coffee shop,
right.
And then the thing is the swing set, the blank one that they can make for the new girlfriend's apartment or whatever.
Right, yeah, right. It's, you're right, it's like Three's Company.
Whatever.
Give her short shorts and let him just wear a velour shirt, and they can go wherever they want, yeah. And we got it done.
Yeah, but you always recognize that set.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
This is a different set every, 2 hours after you're done. With this, they'll redress as best they can, but sometimes they have to rip out a wall, and you've got to go back into prosthetics, makeups. You're constantly into the guy making the thing on your face. You know.
What are some of the characters you played in that show? I mean, was it elaborate characters?
I was Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
I was Larry Fine.
I was,
and
so they have to make you
Telemundo host. I was.
See, that's so funny with the Telemundo. It's like I mentioned to people back east, and they don't really watch it back east. Like here, I'm like, I go down my cable, and there's like. There's a whole Latino section in like Charter, and it's like, but back east, they're like, what? And I go, no. And it's some of the stuff's Chapolin. I wish I spoke Spanish so I could just, I could watch Chapolin.
I know what the half naked lady's saying.
Right. So you're acting away. Now, are you still doing comedy at the time? Are you still, going out on the road more? Or are you concentrating mostly on acting? Because when you have a series, it must take up a lot of your time.
When you have a series, it takes up more time. You're trying to get out. I don't pursue the open, just any market thing right now. It would be a lot of time to build that back up.
Right.
So I'm going where I know it's a lot of fun. Well, and I might start spreading out a little more. If someone get a tour together, I was thinking me and some other buddies who find a niche and we get out and do the tour.
See, that'd be cool because stuff like that, people want to see it. I think the tours do well. So, then you played the Drake on the Seinfeld.
Which yeah.
I was watching that it's so funny. I was watching it the other night, and I was like, oh, wow. And then you're in like, the episode where they have all the things put together when Jerry's show is on. You play, is that the Drake again? You're sitting with some parents?
That's when they're doing the pilot episode where it's Larry Hankin playing Kramer, and
right.
They recast it a little bit.
Jeremy Piven, I think, played George.
Jeremy Piven was George. And I was the Drake, and we'd broken up, and they took away. Remember, they snuck back and stole the big screen TV from
right.
us in the car with the wrecked at the mall. And so now I've got tiny little antenna pull-out handheld TV. And the signal's wrong, and because my hook is the Drake cries, and so.
Right. So did you know Jerry? Is that one of the reasons why you got the audition?
We did that the HBO special years ago.
Okay, yeah, you did the 6th annual Young Comedians.
Yeah.
Now who was on that? You, Jerry,
Harry Anderson, Howie Mandel, I think Richard Lewis.
Okay, so it was a lot. It was a lot of that's an amazing lineup. I mean, it's just what was that like? Did people notice you after that? Because HBO was, for you when you
was Richard Lewis.
Did people recognize you after that? Because I know HBO wasn't as big back then, but still people watch it. Like, did people recognize you from TV?
Yeah, every now and then they'd say, hey, I enjoyed your set.
Okay.
Something nice. Not a Jason, a photo, or anything like that. But hey, good job.
Then, right.
All right, thanks.
You know, that must
keep a young comic boosted.
Exactly.
Keep his chest up.
Okay, so now I'm just, he has an amazing resume. It's like one of those things. The Secret Adventures of Jules Verne.
Yeah.
You know, you were a count? Was that a comedy or is that serious?
That was serious.
Now, did you like playing serious roles?
I do.
Okay. So what was the count? Were you a rich guy? It sounds like you were a rich guy.
Oh, he's a monster. He's
okay.
A knight that was ripped apart hundreds of years ago and by dark magic reassembled into this thing called Count Gregory, where his limbs are all attached to this weird breathing machine. But he's all tin hammered into his own armor for body parts. So he's a fusion of odd machinery, knight armor, and rotting zombie flesh.
Now, it's so funny because now they can do everything like digital and stuff.
No, this was the first. This is the first 24p digital TV show on Earth.
But how did
they? It was a one-hour plot line.
But how did they do? How did you wear all that stuff?
They would put on for a close-up. There's an armor plate that we designed it so when you back away, there's a dummy of him. When he talks, his jaw moves up and down. The eyes
wow.
kind of look around, and because his head's so ripped, it's ripped upward with just little tubes running it
okay.
down to the hole where the neck is.
All right,
we want to show that he's been drawn and quartered since the 1400s.
Right.
So,
okay.
You know, he's being reassembled by this dark group of monks in the catacombs of Constantinople, with their version of technology and magic, and he's now this dark thing that leads the bad guy organization. But I got to design all the machinery. I helped designing the count, along with Meinert Hansen and Phil Stamp, who are two brilliant Montreal artists and conceptualists. And we were the Imagineer team for the show. And I got to, but they came to me for the original design of a thing.
Okay.
And then they'd hand it over to the skilled artists to take the idea and shape it. And then 3 weeks later, I walk on the set and it's built. And I'm walking on the interior of the thing I thought of like a month ago.
That must have been insane. I mean,
it's insane. It was almost insane. So if you ever look on SAJV on YouTube,
okay,
there's piece after piece after piece that has my design work in it. They said, I'm an actor. Why don't you just make me the bad guy since I'm already here?
Right.
And we did a test and they heard my voice. And it worked out fine.
Well, you have a good voice. Thanks. You know, you're very it's one of those good voices. It's like I could listen to a book on tape if you read it. I
mean, hey,
it's like you have a good voice.
Oh, you're very kind.
So now we're going through this, and now you've been in a bunch of shows, and what are some of your favorite parts you've played? I mean, because you've been in so many did you like The Informant?
I was just going to say, I had a ball.
Because Alan Hayes.
A ball being a total a-hole. It's so much fun, man.
That's a great movie.
Have must have had. I was hanging with Have a lot on the set. And he did a great. Isn't he a good, straight, just boom, get up there and say it and do it actor?
Oh, yeah. He was on Louis a few weeks ago, and he's very good at that.
He's a great actor.
Yeah.
He's really good at it. And. Everyone was. I was knocked out by all the comics.
Just yeah, Tompkins was in it.
Finally going, someone gave me the straight shot, man.
Right.
You know, I don't have to, like, oh, here's the pizza and the two lines that anyone could do. They gave them substance stuff.
Right.
And then we could always then show that later on our reel. Go, no, look, see, we do the other part, too. It's just you got to expand in your head what we are.
Now, that was Soderbergh who directed it?
Steven Soderbergh, yeah.
Now, what was that like working for him? Because he has that underground, that's like he was a guy in Independence before they were really independent, the whole scene before said, sexualizing videotapes and stuff like that.
Changing how movies are made with the digital revolution and red cameras and all that. And you can... It was the concept of a red camera that I think eventually...
Now, what is a red camera? I'm sorry.
A red camera is a kind of digital video camera that you can bump up to look cinematic and movie.
Okay.
And you can either transfer to film if you want the film look, or you can put a software part through the end that gives it that extra depth and grain.
Okay.
And I'm sure every year they're going to figure out a new way to make a smaller, lighter version of whatever you want. And now it's an SLR, man.
Right.
It's an SLR. I just bought a used SLR
because
I found out about it. Yeah, and so I'm going to get the right wide-angle lens and start making my own little movies.
Well, you should.
Comedy little pieces and all that.
Why not?
Heck yeah.
It's like I got a little Sony Bloggy because I want to start taping my. I never tape my sets, but I saw it was on sale, and it's just a little camera.
A flip cam.
It's like the flip cam, but it's Sony's version, and they were coming out with a new one. So this was on sale for like half price.
How much?
I got it for $85. Actually, then it was this floor model, so I got 15% off. I got it for like 60 something, which wasn't bad. It's just a bad, but the camera. It's a Sony, and the quality's good. And so I just have to start. I get a little tripod. It's like the cheapest tripod in the world because you can't get a big. You don't want a big tripod, so it's a little tabletop one.
Oh, the little three-leg guy.
The plastic one.
Click,
you can actually bend them.
The alien claw hand.
So Soderbergh was it amazing working for him?
It was amazing working for him. He's a very brilliant and gentle soul, good guy. I saw something that just impressed me so much. Aside from the fact all of his work is just a work of like brilliance, a genius, he's also, he loves actors and artists. He really respects your input as a partner and what you bring to it and what you're going to put in, you know. And we were in Hawaii for the golfing part where we're all playing golf while we're under observation by the feds. And so we went to Hawaii for a couple of days. So we're all just batting the balls around and just goofing around as friends. And in the interim of it, a shaman known as a kahuna comes by to bless our filming and our set.
Okay.
And she did a ceremony, and he stepped right up. and word for word was right with her, repeating all the words and reverent to her. And I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah,
man, he really, you know, that was a very cool thing to do.
The respect.
I'm not sure every guy would have stepped up and done it that way.
Right.
To look, you know, to go outside your own culture, but it makes perfect sense that Steven would do that.
Now, as an actor, did he let you? Was he very by the script, or did he improvise? Or?
You know, I didn't improvise that much. I did a couple of improvised things. A couple things made it in. But mostly, he let me figure out who the guy was, you know. And there wasn't a ton of footage on him. I really want, because it's a real guy. And so, Terry Wilson, and I was. But there's a photo of him, and he just looks like, his, even when he smiles, he got the De Niro
right.
upside down, just weighted mouth, smile, and huh? And he's not that interesting.
Right.
And he's kind of a bully, and he's just a cattleman steakhouse drunk fart, you know? and they say you're supposed to have something about your characters that you like. You should have one thing about it that, you know, is the good thing that you like. And I'm going... I can't give you that, but I like how I play this dick.
Right.
Know?
It's like, it's great. You can see the guy can play a dick, and I don't feel bad. And the guy can't look at me and go, you didn't do a good job because I'm really a dick. So you can't. I can't help that.
Exactly. That's it.
Now, okay, this one throws me off. I'm looking through your resume, and this is something, it just, I don't know, maybe it's me, but you were on General Hospital?
Yeah.
No, that's just, I mean, because it's just, I heard soap operas are different world.
You get pages of stuff and like no time flat, and you just got to stand up and just start saying it.
Really?
And not everyone gets a teleprompter. You just know your stuff and do it. And you get two takes and that's it, and they'll just figure it out. Even if you
flub, really?
They're just going to think, no time. No time.
So how?
Gotta move. Gotta go.
So what is Robert? Were you French?
He's a total con, man. He's so full of it. He's Robert. He talks like this on the phone. To his assistant, and turns out he does another call. Yeah, hi.
Okay.
Yeah. We can't do this right now. No, I'll get back to you later. Okay. Wait. Hello, how are you?
When did you start? Cause I know you do, but when did you start knowing you could do voices? Did you always do them in your act? Or?
I loved Peter Sellers.
Okay.
As a kid, my dad loved Peter Sellers, and he did all these voices. And I kind of study my heroes, too.
Okay.
Check the genealogy of a thing out. And so I went to the source of a lot of his voices. Alec Guinness
okay.
is a big hero to Peter Sellers. And, you know, has he ever heard Clouseau's voice?
Yes.
Cato, do not attack me. I have the groceries, don't you know? And why does he sound like this?
Right.
Because his hero, Alec Guinness, also keeps his voice up here in his nose.
That's amazing. And you do it so good. I mean, so when did you start doing the impressions and the different voices? When you started doing comedy or as when you're in the comedy?
Little kid.
Who were some of the little kids you did, the ones you did? You remember any of them? Did you do a Paul Lynde? Everyone did a Paul Lynde.
Oh, I think I did the laugh. Just trying to say something while you're laughing. I can't do a whole paragraph without passing.
What are some of your favorite voices to do?
Oh, I think I did Johnny Carson. Yes! I mean, it's the kid version. You know, now sort of I can hit the registers
and
sell it better, but I just kind of did the tie when I didn't have a tie and a bounce up on the balls of your feet. And
see, that's funny. We remember that stuff. It's just, it's so funny. It's like, so do you
right here, right now, the Beatles.
Okay. It's amazing. So as a kid, you'd see people doing TV and you'd be like, as a kid, I was fascinated with Rich Little. I'd be like, oh my God, the guy can do so many
things. And Jonathan
voices.
Winters.
Right.
Jonathan Winters could do anything, man.
Now, do you know Jonathan?
I do.
Okay.
We're pals.
Now, have you done improv with him or been on
stage
with him?
Yeah, I have.
What's that like? Because, I mean, everyone just says
you be quiet. Just shut up and stay behind. It's like whatever Blue Angel 1 is doing, Blue Angels 2, 3, and 4 have to do.
Okay. Yeah, I heard he's
turning. Don't improvise now. You'll wreck the whole show. You'll crash.
Now, okay, we only have about six minutes left. Chaos. What was Chaos?
Chaos is this great show. Was so smart. Tom Spezialy came up with this show about this rogue outlaw band of guys called the Chaos Unit at the CIA. And what they're supposed to do is disrupt with distraction while making extractions or other missions like that. And but they don't follow all the instructions. They're a little bit, it's like the unit, that show about the same thing, meets MASH, and they are, they were these guys who were sort of rebels against the structure and wouldn't do torture and wouldn't always shoot and kill a guy when they were told to. They're like good guys, you
right
know?
Now were you one of the rebels, or you, it says
I was operative Blank, who was this weird dude that would walk the hallways that Freddie Rodriguez or Eric Close or
I can't remember his name.
I'm blanking on Jimmy Murray.
Okay.
And of course,
I
didn't know you were going to ask me about this.
I just go with. So, but you play some different characters. Do you like playing? I mean, I know with Dinner with Schmucks, you have that big beard. I mean, do you get a lot of roles to be a character? I mean, would you consider yourself a character actor? Because, I mean, it's a matter of you play so many different versions and you do so many different voices.
I had to shave my beard to get that beard.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, you can't grow a beard on a beard. Picture taking that off every day.
Oh, God, it must have been heavy as hell.
Yeah, I had to tie it with a string on the top of my head.
Really?
Yeah.
That's amazing. Okay, then we're looking also, you were on The Office.
Yeah, I was Pam's dad on The Office.
Now, did you know Carell from anywhere, or I know Dinner Schmucks, or did you know him from The Office, or how did
I
you?
I knew him from The Office previous to that, because I was Pam's dad, but we both came out of an improv background, so.
Okay. Mm. And then it's amazing. I mean, now Children's Hospital, you're on. I mean, it's amazing. Your resume is amazing. The one I'm interested in, though, is it's in pre-production, Confessions from Philly. Just now, did you shoot it in Philadelphia?
Never got shot.
Never got shot?
No.
And that sucks. I mean, because you played a priest in that, right?
Yeah.
See, that's just great. You must love it.
Movie fell through.
Really?
Yeah, we left it up. I got to take it down. I thought it was a great script, but yeah, I mean, I've been waiting a long time for this movie to come through.
Okay.
And it looks like I did it already, but I didn't even do it. So.
Okay. Now, what's coming up for you? I mean, is there any TV coming up? Or, I mean, I know you got an audition.
On Adult Swim, I'm going to be on Children's Hospital and on a news show called Newsreaders.
Okay. Now, what station is that on?
It's on Adult Swim.
Okay.
And you have to look on your local listing to find out where that is. On your cable carrier.
Right. I know mine's down around the high, HD is down like 760-ish.
Okay.
So now, is that a recurring role in the news?
Or I hope so. Did the first one.
Okay, and so has... it's
Did
so,
my first one. There are a few episodes in, so I got one out of the way, and we'll see if that one shows up again, because I am sort of like, briefly, the romantic lead.
Okay.
I mean, the romantic fella to the lead girl, so...
What was your voice on that? Just your regular voice?
Yeah, just my voice. You know, just a guy talking.
So that's pretty cool, though. So how many? Give me another impression. What's one of your favorite impressions? Do you know with your act now? Do you do impressions anymore?
Not so much anymore. I mean, I used to do Sean Connery a lot.
Okay,
but he's retired roughly 10 years ago, since the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen did extraordinarily poor in the cinemas. I have said the hell with it. I'm going to Barcelona. To drink red wine and look at legs.
Can you imagine being him? I mean, it's just like everywhere he goes, women are like, "You were Bond. You were like he was the Bond like everyone loved."
Yeah,
it's crazy.
He's in his 80s, you know.
I know. No. So, yeah. So okay. Who is another one of your favorite voices you've done?
James, come in.
Yes,
this is no ordinary adult diaper 007. All right. So, what were you gonna say?
No, I'm just voices, and I mean, I do crappy voices, so I try to do them, and they just sound awful. I love when people can actually do a voice, because there's nothing worse than a bad impressionist that does impressions. Like, someone's on stage, and you're like, that sounds nothing like what you're trying to do. But yours are right.
I think I will do Bane next.
I haven't seen it.
You have to see it to understand what I'm doing. This sounds like a cartoonish parody of what he sounded like. Until you see the movie, my friend. No, and you'll go, were you drunk when you did this voice for that?
does it sound odd?
My friend! It sounds like a combination of Sean Connery and Jeff Garlin.
That's something I thought I'd never hear, a combination of Jeff Garlin and Sean Connery. That's an amazing combination. That's something that you don't think of every day.
I didn't. I just went to the movie and it sounded like that.
So now, are you still doing the one-man show? I know you were doing a show.
I'm gonna retool a little bit and then figure it out.
And now that was more politically. So was that more political?
Well,
I saw you had. I was at Flappers. I was about to go on stage, and I saw you had like a outfit on.
Yeah, it's political when the topic comes around. To that. Okay, it's the premise is I'm the ambassador.
Okay.
For the landed aliens, and I'm representing humankind. And they ask questions that they print on the wall behind me.
Okay.
It's kind of like the earliest version of, I was working on a show and then bouncing it off of Troy Conrad, and he was helping me with it, and then they kind of branched off and came up with a set list around the idea. So it's about printing something up behind you and then turning around and just explaining. I improvise. The audience writes out what I'm supposed to explain, but I explain it from scratch like you're an alien. You never heard of it before.
All right. Well, you know what? We have to wrap up.
Do you do any editing on the show at all?
No.
You cut it down?
No. We do a straight hour.
Cut the chaos part.
I don't know how to.
Oh.
But it's all right. It's all right.
Tim Blake Nelson. It's Tim Blake Nelson.
See, there you go.
Go blank.
God. It's all right. It happens. Anyway, once again, tell people where they can follow you.
Follow me at Facebook.
Facebook, Rick Overton. And people follow me at Twitter, at CooperTalk, and also coopertalk.podbean.com. I want to thank you again, Rick.
Thanks again, man.
It was great stories. I love these stories. And people, listen to me. Keep listening. And also, coopertalk.net will be coming up. Anyway, have a great weekend. Remember, I'm Steve Cooper. I'm only as hip as my guests.